What's it all for?
Various artists.
Marie Shannon is a Tamaki-based artist whose practice primarily explores the quotidian and profound details of her intimate domestic surroundings. Predominantly working in photography but also video and drawing, Shannon delicately captures her subjects on a large format camera, representing them at their finest through these beautiful vintage silver gelatin and large digital photographs. Narratives and objects of previous homes, love notes and faxes from her late husband Julian Dashbaugh, and sketches by her son Leo alike, her memoiristic practice embraces both the mundane and the personal, inviting the viewer intimately into her world. Her current solo exhibition at Trish Clark Gallery, Life Stories, brings together a curated selection and mini survey of her practice, stretching back to works from the 80s as well as others from more recent years. Presenting photographs and a body of moving image works, the show brings together over 40 years of Shannon's work, life, and practice, many of which were included in her survey exhibition Rooms Found Only in the Home, developed by Dunedin Public Art Gallery in 2018, which went on to tour Christchurch, Wellington, and Auckland as well. I had a kōrero with Marie Shannon about Life Stories and her overall practice.
I'm Marie Shannon and I started out in photography and I still think of myself as based in photography. I suppose that's where I start thinking, but I've moved more towards video, which started with photographs that included text, and then I slowly kind of moved that into video, often with text on screen or voiceover, sometimes both.
Your current solo exhibition at Trish Clark, Life Stories, brings together over 40 years of your work, life and practice, many of which were included in your touring survey exhibition, Rooms Found Only in the Home. In putting the show together, were there any particular reflections or observations that stood out to you in placing these works alongside each other again and contemplating your practice as a whole over the years through that process?
So Trish made the selection and then I had some discussion with her about content as well. She'd make suggestions, I'd make suggestions, but a lot of it was her curation, and curating is something she's very good at and she really enjoys doing that. But what I learned from Rooms Found Only in the Home that you can see in this show as well is there's always been quite a strong thread. So even if works from different series or different periods of my practice might not seem to relate, when you put them in groups, and as the work is at Trish's, it's in small groups and arrangements, but there's quite a strong thread that kind of loops through the whole thing. So in some ways I know that now, and at first I was a bit taken aback. I thought, why doesn't my work have have kind of distinct periods where I no longer do anything that relates to that? And it's just the way I work. I've just probably just kept pulling at these particular threads or picking these particular threads up. And sometimes what happens, kind of as a side to that, is, and it probably happens with a lot of artists and you recognise it over time, is that some ideas don't work for a long time. You might have an idea at some stage in your practice and you just have to put it aside. You might make some notes, you might make a beginning, you might, you know, do some initial work, take some initial photographs, sketches, whatever, and the work just isn't realised, and somehow the idea and the what you make it into just doesn't mesh in some way. And what I've found is I've sometimes picked up old ideas and actually seen a way to make them or worked with them again in a way where, with the way I'm working at that later time, I can resolve it much more easily. So sometimes it's quite good not to rush something through. Sometimes you put it in a folder for 20 years and surprise yourself later.
Yeah, I guess with that, I think because your work feels, maybe autobiographical is the wrong word, but it's so personal and there's
an aspect of memoir in it.
Yeah, it's going to have those recurring threads because it's themes in your own life and your personal life that you're returning to again and again and again. I guess with that, I said before, life and practice is seen in the show, I guess because I think they feel so intertwined. You can immediately feel the intimacy of the work stepping into the show. These photographs of your son Leo's sketches as a kid, of objects that make the home, faxes from your late husband Julian Dashbaugh, like an invitation into your world. In terms of your subject matter, how do you kind of see that relationship between your practice and personal life?
I've always basically worked from the home. I've worked from the interior, and I've worked with material that's been close to me. And I guess that was just where I saw some sort of potential, and I've said this before, but when I was at art school, I started off in the late 1970s, the prevailing style was documentary photography, and you had to find a project and you had to find something, and it was very externally facing, and it was very kind of probably issues based, or you found something to, you know, make a photographic study of or a series of. But as a 19-year-old from the suburbs, I didn't have access to anything very special or unusual, or I didn't have the confidence to place myself into a new environment and feel like I had something to say about it. Mm. So in some ways that sounds very insular and unadventurous, and it was, but I also didn't have any big subjects in me. Mm. So I kind of started out small, which kind of led to a noticing of the little things around you and the way sometimes those things come together to create something that's worth showing, I guess.
Mm.
And in some ways that's similar to the decisive moment where, you know, typically you might be a street photographer and you're looking and everything's busy and suddenly you see these elements come together visually that make something. And what I was doing was I was thinking about things more slowly and I was noticing things, and then I might recreate something for the camera. So it was, I guess what I was doing, I was slowing down the process of looking and thinking rather than having to look and think on my feet and be kind of fast moving and out in the world.
I guess these ideas of home and the domestic realm, they've always felt like a very important setting in your work. It's interesting to hear that kind of like origin story of that gravitation towards that subject matter. Is there something that's kind of kept you grounded in that exploration throughout your practice?
Convenience. maybe I'm just lazy. Maybe I just don't like to get up and get out of the house. I mean, I do, you know, I do go outside. I do go out into the world. Although, and I know Yvonne Todd has the same problem when she's photographing out in the world. She uses a very large camera. I use a large view camera that takes a 4-inch by 5-inch or 10 by 12 centimeter negative.
Mm.
So it's a big camera sitting on a tripod, and it's a man magnet. If you want to meet an old guy, go out on the street, particularly as a younger woman. Someone who's usually a man will come up and tell you it's a big camera.
Yeah.
And you go, yes, it is.
Well yes, good job.
Yeah.
Nice observation.
And then you try to get on with what you're doing and you've got a black cloth over your head and it's very hot.
Yeah.
And they just want to chat.
Yeah.
But that's all right.
And you just want to be left alone.
Yeah, absolutely.
You need to do your work in peace.
I do. So there is that.
Yeah.
There's definitely that.
Do you feel like you need to be in a certain headspace to create?
Yes, I do. And I always need a lot of time to think about things. And I've always given myself that time. Like I might, the thing with large format photographs is that you don't take, you know, like you don't take a roll of 36 exposures.
Mm.
You might give yourself 2 sheets of film or 4 sheets of film. So you very much go into a situation knowing what you want. So there's a lot of time, and this is with my still photography practice, there's a lot of time that you spend just sitting in a room looking. And I often arrange something for the camera. As I said, you know, I might notice something and then I might recreate it for the camera, or I might slightly enhance it or stage it for the camera. But it will derive from some domestic detail or something around the house. So most of my time will be spent not looking through a viewfinder, but actually arranging something in light. And I use available light just through windows, sometimes with a little bit of bounced light with a reflector. You can use a piece of A4 paper, you know, very, very low tech, very low key.
Mm.
So a lot of what I do is just observing and then setting up for the camera and then making sure everything's framed, you know, framed properly in the camera. And so that's where I spend my time.
Mm.
And then I might wait for some light. You know, the sun might go behind a cloud, I might wait for it to come back out or vice versa. But that's where I spend my time. So I do spend a lot of time looking and thinking.
Mm. I feel like that kind of quietude translates really beautifully in the work as well. Like you can kind of feel that the objects you photograph have been really sat with and carefully cared for, and the formation or the way that you photograph them, you can, I don't know, it feels really peaceful to interact with the work as well.
Yeah. Oh, that's good to know. It's not hectic.
Yeah. No. I guess with that, we've been talking a lot about like the home and these ideas that surround that. But interestingly, what stood out to me in this show is your video work, Car Stories, which seems to take place outside of the home. And this is a more relatively recent work in the show, having been made in 2018. Are you able to speak to me a little bit more about this work and how you see it in conversation with the rest of the show or your practice and the way it slightly diverges from those previous familiar subjects?
Yeah, well, it's set in a car.
Yeah.
You're right. Good spotting. I like the idea of finding a framework for a story. So I took that the idea of Car Stories, and basically it's a memoir based around the car I was driving at the time, or the cars that I've had access to drive, either owning them or borrowing them from my mother, or owning them, or somebody else's car that I was close to that I was driving, for example, cars Julian owned. So it's a chronological from the time I got my driver's license to the present and the car that I still have. So there are intertitles that introduce the car, the license plate, and the period of time that I drove it. And for some reason, I can remember the license plate of every car.
Wow.
I think there was one where I was missing two digits. It's just one of those things.
That's quite amazing.
Yeah. And I'm not a numbers person, so I don't know. I don't know why that is. So that seemed to be a good place to start. You know, if I can remember all these license plates, wow, I need to use that in some way. So that's the framing device for talking about things that happened either in the car or around that time, but mostly the anecdotes around driving or learning to drive or driving or being in the car or other people who were in those cars. So it's quite a nice, as a way of writing something or as a way of corralling information, it's a nice framework. And I got the idea from a series called Stereo Stories, and I think that's the name of the website, but you can look it up. And various writers write about particular pieces of music that meant something specific at a specific time in their lives.
Beautiful.
It's really beautiful. And what got me into that was the author Maria Maisha, who's someone that I've known for a long time. And I don't read a lot of her writing, but I've always been really interested in it. And she's written a couple of them, and they're just the way she uses a piece of music, and it's not necessarily something she loves. It might be something that brings up a difficult memory or a reason why she's never liked a genre of music and she's wondering why, or she's revealing why. But just the idea that you can use that device to set up a period of time or to go back into a period of time, and we don't need to hear the music. We just need the name of the song. It's not about the music. It's not even about liking the music, but it's about what that music gave someone access to, or what thinking about that music gives someone access to. So I thought it was a great framing device, so I stole it, but I used it for cars.
Yeah, beautiful. That's so special, because I think it's really easy to develop those memories and connections with music and with being in a car trip, or, you know, with someone else in a car. I think even just like being in that small space with someone.
Yeah, it's a container.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a limited number of things that are going to happen.
Yeah.
But things are going to happen. And it's not about drama, although funny things can happen. And, you know, the difficulty of selling cars and all the things that might happen. But it's a kind of a way to organize your material. So I think it's a great, you know, for anyone who's thinking about writing or who's thinking about making something. You know, when you come to a project, you think, oh, but I can choose out of anything in the world, where do I start and where do I stop? You know, having that container or a framing device in some way, you know, and in the same way as my video, The Rooms in the House, creates a framing device or a container for another kind of memoir, which is my son's memories of the house that he grew up in after he left home. And again, that was a way of organising something that could be too big a subject matter to be contained, or where it tells you where to start and stop.
You spoke a little bit about it before, but I want to talk a little bit more, of course, about your photography practice. Majority of the show is these beautiful vintage silver gelatin and large digital photographs, many of which capture objects in this carefully staged and focused formation, a quiet invitation of sorts whereby the viewer is really able to consider one object's narrative or poetic resonance. Are you able to walk me through your process with this conceptually and how this takes shape in your process practically?
I've kind of touched on that, like it'll start with me noticing something. Like, for example, there's a work called Lights, which is, it's working from the margins inwards. It's a background of brown paper, and then there's a set of Christmas lights that are wrapped around a homemade cord caddy, which is basically a piece of corrugated cardboard with notches cut into it.
Mm.
And that's how we packed away our Christmas lights each year. And then the following year, whenever you controversially bring out your Christmas tree, and I won't say when, but December, when you bring out the Christmas lights, you don't unwrap them before you plug them in to see if they're still working.
Mm.
So you take the whole caddy up to the plug and you plug them in and you go, yeah, these ones are good. You put them over in the good pile. So I was just looking at that, doing something that can then be, that's kind of, you know, you've got this bundled up set of Christmas lights sitting on the floor and they're glowing, so they're sort of festive but not yet festive.
Mm.
So I like that idea of that really mundane festivity of the lights, and in the image the lights are wrapped around the cardboard and some of them are glowing and some of them aren't.
Mm.
So they're Christmas lights but they're still kind of packed away. So that to me was a beautiful object. And then what I play with is making it beautiful but still mundane, so it doesn't have to be overstated. So, which is why I chose the unfolded brown paper background rather than leaving them on the floor. So it's slightly, so I start with what actually happened and then I kind of arrange it for a photograph. So it is it's the finding the thing and then elevating it to the point where you maybe isolate it from its background, or you give it a new background, or you create a little still life with a single object, and then you just move around it and light it and reflect it, and, you know, you just make it look its best.
Mm.
And then you just take a very slow photograph.
Another thing I really noticed with the show is coming through in a variety of forms is text. You've got Julian's faxes and the Arkin faxes, your own writing in the rooms in the house and an Astor Hotel accompanying a photograph of a Guinness. Text and writing feel like very important elements in your practice. I'd love to hear a little bit more, I guess, about what interests you in this inclusion and connection with the viewer through text, though.
I've always been a reader. I started using text in still images in the 1990s, and that was a way of being thrifty, in that I was able to use ideas and make work describing ideas of artworks that I'd never make. So I've got, they're like proposals or they're like reflections on things, and the only way I could realize them was by writing them down, because basically it's an account of something. And so I did, in I think 1994, I did a series called The Karaoke Tour of Sydney, and one was describing a performance series that I do when I had a show in Sydney at CBD, and I actually started off thinking I would really do performances, and I really thought that I'd have the performance called The Karaoke Tour of Sydney, and it would be me who can't sing, unfortunately. So that was my first problem, doing a tour of karaoke bars in Sydney, and that would be my show at CBD. It would be like me on tour. There was nothing in there that was going to be good. There was nothing in there that was really going to work. And I realized that. And it's a way of, you know, you have those big bubble ideas, and they're going to be great. And then as you step through them, you realize that you're never going to do them. But what it is that it's a way of capturing that first idea that excites you, and not having to live with the disappointment of not being able to do it. So you do it, but you do it in the most mundane way, which is you write it down as a failed thing, or a thing you thought you'd do but you realised that you'd never do. And really that's the work. It's text. It's text written on cardboard and photographed. And then, you know, photographed in a way that the light picks up the cardboard that it's written on, and it picks up the pencil impressions. And so photographically it's quite satisfying, but it's a very mundane object and it tells a kind of a dopey story. And then there was another one in that pair that were pencil on cardboard that was Map of the Buskers, and it described all of the buskers around Circular Quay and how I was going to make this map, and then I started talking about the buskers. So it was a way to bring actual anecdote or things that couldn't be rendered visually, things that had to be rendered in words. But it's not a poem, it's not a short story, it's not a book, it's not a novel, it's not an essay. It's just a piece of writing, and it's a short piece of writing. It might be 300 to 400 words or fewer. So it was just a way to put these ideas down. And then the other way I did that was I took background image negatives, which would be sort of vaguely disturbed seawater, like photographs of the sea from above. So they'd create this sort of, or the sky, photographs of, big dark clouds. So they'd just create a tonal and atmospheric background to write text on. But they were just writing down these ideas. For example, there was another one called New Zealand's Funniest Art Video, it started out, I wasn't thinking, I'm never going to make this. They all started off thinking, I'd love to make this. And that was, and again, the work just describes what I thought I'd do, and then I realised that I couldn't possibly organise all of this. And the idea was that I'd select a group of artists to come up to Waiwera Hot Pools with me. I'd have to get a minivan, obviously. I'd have to get them in their togs. And they'd all slide down this really terrible water slide that had a really bad finish. You always got water up your nose.
Absolutely.
And it would just be a fixed frame, and I'd just film them all coming out of the end of it and in various horrified, poses.
Awesome.
But, yeah, that's never going to happen.
Please, can we make this happen? There's no Waiwera, but another Hot Pools.
Exactly.
It's got to be done.
Well, someone else can now do it. I give you the idea, so please somebody else do it.
Please.
Yeah. Give me a footnote credit, but just go.
Go for it.
Do your best, yeah.
That was artist Marie Shannon speaking to me about her current solo exhibition at Trish Clark Gallery, Life Stories, as well as her broader practice. Life Stories is on view at Trish Clark until the 2nd of May.